This is a Power to Change project funded by the National Lottery Community Fund. Hi, I'm your host, Jamila Faisal, and this is Jam Packed. We are now doing episode 3, focusing on mental health and also a bit of social media. Here I have Amy.
Hi, I'm Amy Cook, Head of Children and Young People at Leicestershire Cares.
And I have got Tracy here.
Hi, I'm Tracy Renshaw. I work for Samworth Brothers and I'm Communications and Engagement Partner.
So let's get started. Okay, so I think with the mental health episode today, it's very prominent in day-to-day and there are so many different aspects of it. So what would you say that mental health means to you?
Well, I think there's lots of different diagnoses of mental health for people, lots of different levels. It can affect people on a day-to-day basis. It can affect people quite severely as well. So I think it depends on how you're suffering. I've had some experience of mental health myself and also, you know, experienced it with friends and colleagues as well. So it is a very, very kind of day-to-day subject, I feel.
Feel like especially with the coming years that we've had, mental health has become more of a more prominent thing, as before it was mainly seen as, oh, it's all in your head and it's not real and whatnot. But as you mentioned, there's like so many different aspects to it, so many different layers to uncover. It can be more prominent in people's lives, where other people will suffer with it less. And what about you then, Amy?
So I'm very similar to Tracy in terms of what my frame of reference is. Obviously, professionally, I've worked with people with lots of different experiences of the mental health system.
Yeah, of course. But
also, for many years, I was what was known as a mental health first aid instructor.
Okay,
so interesting. So I got to know more of the clinical sides of supporting mental health.
Yeah. Sort of like the textbook versions almost.
Yeah, so you actually learn a lot more of, I suppose, if you were going for a medical or psychology degree, what you would learn about those specific conditions, which I'm not going to say necessarily means you can support anyone any more or less. But it's just given me a very different insight. But also having supported a very close family member who has very severe psychosis, I've got first-hand experience as well.
That's great. Me too, like in terms of family members and whatnot, I think psychosis is something that's not spoken about as much because maybe it's seen as something that's more, not necessarily to be ashamed of, but something that's a little bit more taboo, or people don't want to talk about it necessarily because of the stigma attached to it, because of the sort of alienation that you might feel towards it. But yeah, no, I think you guys both have some great points about it. So okay, I think one of my first questions would be for you, Tracy.
Yeah.
Seeing that you are sort of like support those, you are a in your field of work, you support colleagues, you support people that are in the workplace and their mental health and how they feel and how they're doing in their day-to-day lives, what would you say is something that you do to support people in the workplace with their mental health?
I think as a business, we have quite a lot of support. Obviously, if one of our colleagues raises something or, you know, is off poorly, that's to do with mental health issues, that will be raised initially probably through their manager. But we have things in place, like we have an occupational health nurse that comes in that they can be referred to. We can tap into different organisations like Grocery Aid, EAP, and we have a digital GP app that people can use, which gives them access to doctors 24/7, and they can get appointments with them, and then that can be referred on to help them get other support if they need to.
Yeah.
Grocery Aid is amazing. It's a charity that supports food manufacturing.
Okay.
And it supports not just the colleagues but their family members as well.
That's really great.
And there's all sorts of, they can get counselling through there. They can be referred to other outside counselling if they need to be.
Yeah.
They can get financial support and help.
Help
with all sorts of different aspects, which is really good.
So I think, because I didn't really know that I knew there was support out there, depending on sort of like, especially what sort of workplace you are in.
Mm.
But now that you've sort of mentioned, there's so much more that maybe we didn't know about, or things that are being done now that maybe wasn't done a few years ago. And I think it's just amazing to hear that there's so many different places that you can access for different parts of your mental health or different things that you may be struggling with. So that's,
yeah, and I think
just, that's
something
good.
Like COVID has highlighted that as well.
Oh yeah, definitely. COVID has shaped people.
It has, and I think as a business we recognise that as well, and as well as all those different support networks
because,
we can reach to. We do things to help colleagues on site. And even things like mental health awareness weeks and events and stuff like that. It just helps a little bit.
No, honestly, like you mentioned COVID, which is really. It really kind of like hit everyone really hard because, first of all, it was such a scary thing for a lot of people. And then also with the aspect of having to quarantine, having to do lockdown again, that must have affected so many people in so many different ways. And one of those being mental health, one of those being your confidence taking a plummet, not feeling like you know what you need to do after having that long period of staying at home.
It very isolated people, didn't it, a lot?
It made them feel so much more alone and upset than they would have been previously. And also, I feel like it highlighted a lot of anxiety that people had that they didn't necessarily know they had. But because of the lockdown and the whole situation, it resulted in people feeling so much more insecure about things. So, okay, going on to you now, Amy. What would you say that you tend to do to help support those, whether it's children or, as you said, other sort of like colleagues and whatnot?
Yeah, so pretty much with anyone, I'm always going to put kindness at the front. We actually have a saying in Less She Cares, it's called CAKE. Creativity, agility, kindness and empathy. And you could apply this to anybody that you are supporting with a mental health issue. You must always start with kindness.
Kindness literally costs nothing. I have a jumper and it says kindness costs nothing.
Kindness costs nothing, but you need kindness. When you are struggling mentally, when you are in pain or you're anxious, kindness is one of the most important things because you...
It really showcases humanity, doesn't it?
Yeah, kindness. Absolutely.
I think it's one of those things where, especially when you're younger and you get taught, you know, kindness is this big thing. I think that really shapes somebody to understand the values and how kindness is just so infectious, but also it really helps you connect with others in a much more empathetic way.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, there's empathy. I think as Tracy's said, you know, we've all gone through areas of low well-being or we might have had a mental health condition. We're all on that spectrum of different symptoms of like anxiety and depression and other things. Some people have gone through psychosis when they've had medication. So I think anyone can empathise when somebody's going through something pretty awful.
Yeah.
When I talk about creativity and agility, we're quite a small charity. It's a small team.
Yeah.
So we really feel it when somebody's not here or somebody's really struggling. So we have to be a little bit more creative and agile when we're supporting each other.
It's kind of like when you have a jigsaw, right, and then you've got one piece that's been taken out, it's not complete.
No.
So I think, again, when you like mention, you know, not, when someone's not like, you know, there and their attendance is a bit here and there, or maybe if somebody isn't their normal self, it's more obvious and it's more like prominent. And then that way, that results in being like, okay, you know, and speaking to that said person, being like, how are you actually doing? Are you okay? And then it instills a bit of, oh, people actually do realise. And it's not like I'm just a forgotten piece that's been put to the side. Like, I do matter and I do sort of like bring a sense of like my own self to the group, and I am wanted, I am needed, and I do feel like I'm a part of something, which I think is really, really important. Okay, now, like, what is something that you would say that you try and do, or techniques or maybe things that you've done in the past that helps promote positive mental health?
I think from a work point of view, we obviously we try to promote all those services that we have available to people, and it's difficult sometimes because when you're on a site of and you're on a site of like over 1,000 people, it's quite difficult to give them that one-to-one support all the time. And then you kind of relying on the managers and that the team of people around them. Whereas obviously with Leicestershire Cares, it's a much smaller entity and it would probably be recognised a lot quicker. Obviously in my own team at work, that it would be the same. But then when you've got such a big... So you're relying on the people. And sometimes you're relying on that person that's suffering to speak up about it. And that's the first hurdle a lot of the time.
Yeah.
And sometimes, unfortunately, they don't want to.
Yeah.
And then, you know, that can lead to more serious effects. But
yeah.
I think we've got to instill the confidence in colleagues that they can come to us for that support and they can speak to us. Because I think sometimes it's still seen as a bit of a stigma and a bit of a weakness to say, actually, hold on, I'm suffering a little bit.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
I think we just need to instill that confidence in our colleagues that we are there to support them.
I think you mentioned a lot of good points, especially when being open and being able to go to anybody who is in your workplace who deals with those sort of issues. I think a lot of people see mental health as a weakness or something that's going to stop them from doing certain things. But it's really, really important to, kind of just let people know that, no, it's not a weakness. Everyone goes through bad mental health days. Everyone goes through their issues and things that they struggle with. And if anything, it shows that you're human.
Yeah.
And
like Amy says, then it's really important to show that kindness and that empathy, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Because if they know that there's somebody there that's going to listen to them, and sometimes that's all it takes is just somebody to listen to them, and then that might then give them the, you know, step forward to like go and see their GP or access a service if they want
definitely.
To.
Definitely. Going on to the whole GP thing, I've just reminded me of something that unfortunately, due to lack of funding and whatnot with the NHS, sometimes even though somebody is struggling very much so with their mental health, they've been put on waiting lists, they've been put on, almost been put to the side, and it's not being dealt with the way that they needed to be dealt with, and they have to end up, you know, staying on these waiting lists for years and years sometimes. And I think it's great that, again, the workplace do help on those aspects, because while they are waiting for those answers from the NHS, they can still go to somebody in the workplace.
Yeah, and obviously with the stuff we've got in place, they can access a GP and they can access
So there is still something
there.
In
some cases, people have, like, our private medical cover that then you can access help with depression through that as well. So I think all those kind of benefits of working in a company like that is really
I mean, the larger the company, you would expect there to be more things put in place, right? So I think, especially with your field of work, there's things that are accessible. Now, going on to you, Amy, similar to what I've just asked Tracy, what are some things that you try and do to help with promoting good mental health?
So it is all about, I suppose, what I look at as risk factors and protective factors. And I think in a workplace, you should be promoting protective factors and reducing risk factors.
Yeah, safeguarding, so, things like that.
It's just what promotes good mental health. So I think it is, as a manager, you're looking at workload. We work with very vulnerable young people, and unfortunately, you can get things like empathy fatigue. You can go home thinking about something that's happened to somebody.
It's one of those things with, as you say, like things, even though you try and keep your work life and your personal life, but unfortunately, not unfortunately, but, you know, it's one of the things, we're humans at the end of the day.
Yeah.
Some things just can't be separated.
Yeah.
Especially when you build connections with people from both ends, from the young person's end and from your end. You guys will still have, you know, feelings and have all these close bonds with people. And it might not be as easy to switch off from that.
No.
So, you know, it kind of does bleed through.
Yeah, so you do have to have, like, what we call a bit of oversight on talking through with members of staff when they're working with particularly emotive subjects. What I'd also say is, you know, we have lots of social events, we have lots of shared lunches. We think it's very important at Leicestershire Cares that we're here in a physical building together. A lot of workplaces is now very work from home.
Remotely working, you know,
as we said, you might not spot the signs of a colleague who physically looks or their behaviours, but also there is nothing better than in real life. I'm going to say, you know, when we perhaps talk a bit more about social media, but being in the presence of people who can pick up on certain cues will promote better mental health.
Definitely.
But also around here, we support each other when, you know, we might do an exercise challenge. We might go out and do something socially. We support people when they're thinking about things like quitting smoking and looking at you, Erin. But we are supportive because these are factors that promote good mental health. When you talk about risk factors, it is, you know, some of it is like around poor sleep, poor diet, lack of exercise. But also in the workplace, that can be isolation, lack of supervision.
Yeah.
As we said, you know, not having those support services signposted to correctly. So they're some of the things that, you know, we do, not just what I do, but collectively we do here at,
I guess, everyone, even if, like, maybe you're sort of like maybe one of the main people who worked with that sort of thing. I think especially with mental health, as you said, risk factors, particularly when working with young people and safeguarding and different issues and whatnot, I think it's really important to have that kind of like be on guard about those things, because there's so many different mental health issues and so many different accommodations that need to be put in place and things that you need to look out for, and maybe having those boundaries as well. Because, like, for example, let's say autism and ADHD, usually what you'll find is those people will maybe gravitate towards certain people or create really close bonds with certain individuals. And although it's really great and it's good, I think also trying to have a few boundaries is really important.
Yeah, you're spot on.
And also just looking out for those signs of when you think, okay, this individual has these sort of needs. Should I take them to the side? Should I have a little chat with them? Is everything okay? You know, if they're doing certain tendencies more than they usually would, just things like that. Okay, so in terms of, like, in the workplace and whatnot, what are things that can be provided in terms of, like, I'd say, like, holidays or maybe taking time off for those when they struggle with poor mental health? What can be, you know, sort of given to them?
I think, obviously, when you're in a workplace, that they'll be supported, the manager will support them, you know, the probably the HR team will support people. And, you know, I think in situations it might be, if it's quite bad, people will be signed off work anyway, so they'll be able to take that kind of time off.
Yeah, and they
could,
like, hopefully maybe get from the GP. Sometimes what they'll do is they'll write notes and whatnot.
So they'll probably be given a sick note or something to have a certain period of time off to help support them in the transition. And then that will be supported from the workplace as well, where the manager and the HR team will also support that and do regular check-ins with the people and make sure they're okay, you know, that kind of thing. Unfortunately, all workplaces have policies and procedures they have to adhere
to. Yeah, of course,
You know, there will be different stages they probably have to go through to adhere to policies and so forth. But, you know, there's all that signposting there, and that's the support. Because at the end of the day, it's to make sure that that colleague is fit for work and that they're ready to return to work, and can anything be put in place to help them in the workplace when they return?
So just looking at all the different aspects.
There's all that to consider.
And I think it's important because sometimes, unfortunately, what tends to happen is, depending on what sort of work environment you're in as well, because it all will vary, is that you will have to take time off. You will have to take a break. You will have to rejuvenate yourself and kind of get back being more sort of like better in your health and whatnot. But it's important to sort of highlight those things because, you know, a lot of people struggle. And then also, they feel like they are, their sense of worth almost will plummet because, yes, they need to take that time off, but also they'll feel guilty about it. They'll feel like they would still need to be going into work and still need to be doing all these things, and yeah, you don't deserve a break.
Feel like they're being supported yeah. in that.
And sometimes, yeah. you know, unfortunately, they will have burnout and whatnot. So it's all those different things yeah. that, are, you know, you have to think about. But yeah, going on to you similarly, what things can be offered in terms of like breaks or in terms of taking a few days off and whatnot?
It's very similar to Tracy, and I think what we'll say is that that does correspond across a lot of workplaces because we follow employee directives yeah. across the UK. So there's yeah. things around your holidays and your sickness. But then you have aside that your own kind of business policies and your people culture. Here and anywhere, look, you unfortunately in employment you are replaceable, but in your life you are not. So sometimes people do need to put themselves first. And as Tracy's, you know, alluded, we can do that to an extent.
There's only so much that you can do.
There is, yeah. There is. And also, you know, the raison d'etre for a business is to be a business.
Yeah.
So at some, you know, as I said, when somebody's off here, we feel it. We're only 16 people.
Yeah.
And so, you know, there is an impact on other people. And you know, that can, it is a domino effect and it can cause stress. So it is a good way, you know, to have strategies in place, as we said, to get somebody back to work when they're well enough, but
yeah,
also to be supported to stay in work.
Having those things, again, strategies, those things that they can do, like the work can do from their end, to kind of be like, right, you've taken time off, we do understand, here are A, B and C that we can do, what would you like? What communication is a key thing, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
What is something that we can do to help you, to support you, to make you feel better while you are still in the workplace? What are things that we can do so that things that we may need to avoid or things that we could possibly change about in terms of routine that will help you? Would you like something that's, you know, because sometimes people, they struggle like in the mornings, especially with their mental health.
Yeah.
So would you like it so we can change your shift to another time of the day?
Yeah, it can be things
or
like that, yeah.
Even just like doing half at home and then half in the workplace.
I suppose what you're saying, you need to view a person holistically. So you can have sickness strategies in a business. The problem is, it's not a one-size-fits-all.
No. Exactly.
If somebody has cold or flu, and I suppose with a food production, somebody has a stomach bug, you know what you're doing, you know the time periods.
Yeah.
That's a bit easier.
Off
with
for
a,
48
yeah,
hours. Yeah.
With a mental health issue.
It's more like very
it's
much...
It's very, very holistic. So you do have to look... You've said some of the things are absolutely right within, you know, some of it is reasonable, what you call a reasonable adjustment. But it is a two-way street. The way I see it, it's a cooperative between you, the employer, and the employee to find a way to meet the business needs. They're meeting their contract to come to work as well. You know, you are contracted to work, but you know that you're doing as much as you can to make that happen.
Definitely, definitely.
But it is, I will say, it is a two-way street. I don't think, as we've said, it can all be on the employer.
Yeah.
We're not medical specialists. We're not rehabilitate. Well, you might be an employer that does that,
but
we're not all that.
Right, it's not always going to fit into that sort of
no,
box.
Not at all. Yeah. But it is around. I think it always starts with that culture of openness, kindness, empathy that allows then someone to feel that they can enter into those conversations with their employer.
Yeah.
Hopefully without prejudice
yeah.
and stigma, which means you know these things happen. I think where there's a breakdown in trust and communication with an employer is where it all goes very badly wrong.
Yeah, I think also, like as you mentioned, employer or someone who's in a higher position, I think it's really important that when you know somebody who is in that field of work or somebody who is employing said manager, they need to really look into certain qualities. Like, is this person, they might have all the things on pen and paper, like things that are more like qualifications or all these skills, but do they have that empathy? Do they have that humanity? Are they able to work around situations, or are they just going to straight out just be very much like, you know, have a cold shoulder and just sort of like push it to the side? That's something really important.
Yeah.
You guys have both like raised really good points that I think maybe some people might not have thought about. Mm-hmm. But again, this podcast is all about getting to that nitty-gritty, getting to that point where, you know, all these layers have been uncovered, you know? Okay, something else that I was thinking about when I, you know, was sort of like thinking about questions for this episode was in terms of like if there is a crisis situation or something where it's like very much, you know, you need to think quick and whatnot, what would be the first protocol in terms of what you would do?
Do you mean if something happened with a certain member of staff on site that was seen as like a crisis situation?
So, for example, let's say that one of your staff members was struggling with their depression or maybe their anxiety. Let's say they had a panic attack, or if it was depression, they were struggling with some sort of suicidal ideation. Yeah. What would be the protocol?
I think that the protocol would be, obviously, whoever has raised that, seen that, you know, noted that, would then, I think, would probably initially go to their manager, and their manager would then probably come to our team, which is the people team. So I sit in the people team, which also has our people advisors on, which is what you would probably know as a HR advisor.
Yeah.
And they would come to those to then take advice as what to do.
Okay.
I mean, it may be we have an occupational health service that we have not on site every day, but we have had, and I've actually had a similar situation to this, and luckily on that day we did have the occupational health nurse on site, so she immediately stopped seeing all of the people she was seeing. We got this person went and spoke to her, she discussed what was happening with them, they got referred to their to speak to their GP or to access one of the services.
Yeah.
And I think if, you know, we need to and they give us permission to, we would like contact maybe one of their next of kin.
Yeah, of course.
Get them to come and collect them if they wanted to, you know, we felt that was necessary, if we felt like that person shouldn't be going home on their own or shouldn't be driving, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah, of course.
So that, you know, that would be kind of, I think, what we what we would do in that kind of circumstance. Okay. Yeah.
Now going on to you, Amy. I mean, I feel like it'd be pretty similar.
Well, I can apply more theory because obviously I did mental health first aid and work with. So I will give you something to remember, which is called ALGEE, A-L-G-E-E. This will help you whether somebody has a suicide ideation
or some sort of crisis,
a panic attack
or psychosis.
They just come up to you and they're crying, they're upset. Apply it anywhere. A, assess the risk. Okay, is this person at risk of harm right now? Or is this something that appears to be a bit lower level and in the longer term? And that's going to help inform how quickly you act, whether this goes through a chain of people or whether this is actually life-saving.
Yeah.
Within the L is listen non-judgmentally. So within between the A and the L, if you think somebody might have suicide ideation, ask them. It will not make them kill themselves.
Yeah.
Ask them, and what I have experience of applying this, they will tell you yes or no.
Yeah.
At that point, though, what they'll often do is tell you why, what's leading to it.
Yeah.
You don't interrupt, you don't bring in your own experiences, you just listen. And silence is a wonderful thing during a crisis.
I think, yeah.
As long as they know you've got presence. The G is give reassurance. So you're going to stay, not in a threatening way. You're not going to put hands on them. You're not going to pull them off a bridge per se.
Yeah.
You're not going to wrestle things. But I'm going to stay here because I'm worried about you. I don't want you to be on your own. And then the two E's is encourage self-help. So what will help now? Could we do some breathing exercises? Is there a family member we can call? Do we just want to sit here for a while?
Yeah.
The second E is getting encouraged, but also just elicit basically professional help.
Yeah.
Do you need to call the police, the crisis team? Do you need to take this person to a GP, A&E?
Exactly,
or if it's a lower level, you are encouraging to go to a GP, to sign up for the talking therapies, even just, shall we go for a walk? Depends on the scale that the crisis is. If you remember this, though, Jamila, you will hopefully get through this situation in a way that doesn't affect you. But actually, when you've been through a crisis, you have to apply ALGEE to yourself. When you have dealt with somebody who is attempting suicide or having those ideations, it is very, very stressful. You do have stress reactions afterwards.
I think it's about fight or flight as well. Because yeah. even though you have to stay within those guidelines and whatnot, again, fight or flight. So we sort of like have to reel back a little bit and kind of go like, okay, yes, this is what I would do. But what do I need to do and what is going to be best in this situation?
Absolutely. Yeah. And it's about that A, that assess. Assess it.
Yeah.
Take some time.
Yeah.
It's very easy to jump to conclusions as well, which could break that trust straight away between you and that person.
Yeah.
So just take some time to assess what's going on around you, what the level of risk is, and that's when you can put things together.
Yeah.
But yeah, don't just leg it. Don't be that person.
No, especially when you're in like, you're in like a work environment or something, even though you have to take precautions and whatnot, of course, you know, the last thing that needs to be done is fleeing from that situation.
Yeah.
But it's really important because, unfortunately, you know, a lot of people struggle with suicide or panic attacks or psychosis or whatever the crisis may be. But sometimes they'll either leave it until it's too late or it will build up and build up and build up and then there'll be this sort of, you know, this big bang. But again, I think communication, open communication is really important. I think constantly checking in, I think assessing situations and trying to look out for certain behaviours and whatnot is important.
And I think what Amy just said, sometimes just that sitting down and having that conversation can be enough.
Because it will make people think and somebody's listening to them, and it may need to go further.
But I'm a real advocate of mental health first aiders.
Yeah, yeah.
I think they're really, really good.
And that's one thing for any workplace, I think, to invest in sending people on that. Because I've just passed a piece of that training on. I did this years and years ago as an instructor, and it's still in my
mind.
It's still always going to be there.
You'll never forget
that. I won't, no. And it hopefully informs everything I do in terms of around supporting people with their mental health. But that is a clinically backed training course. It's a day or two, and it can make the world of difference in a workplace. You have first aiders, you have fire marshals. Why do we not have first aiders?
Why is the same emphasis not put on things like mental health? And it goes back to the thing of, oh, you can't see it. It's not a broken leg. It's not, you know, some other sort of thing or something that's come up in a test.
It's not a fire.
It's not legislative either. It's not statutory. Like, we have to, Tracy will tell you, at Sandwith Group, there will have to be a number of health and safety reps, a number of fire, number of first aiders. We have to here in a small building.
Regulation.
Because it's regulation, but this isn't
there
at the
isn't any regulation about mental health first aiders.
And maybe the conversation is, Jamila, that maybe that should be the case one day, you know. But,
it's definitely getting better than what it was before. It's definitely improving. You know, mental health is becoming more of a well spoken thing that people are talking about, and especially like men's mental health as well, which is something that wasn't as seen. Because obviously, like, typically you've got the cookie cutter, okay, yes, women are more emotional, they're more, you know, sensitive and this and that and all those things. But then at the end of the day, you know, men are, yes, they may have certain characteristics that are slightly different to women, but it's not to say that they don't struggle with their mental health.
And they tend to bottle it up more.
A lot of men.
It's seen as not...
It's seen as weak, it's seen as...
macho, is it?
No.
Which is not the case at all.
You know, even
everyone
like
suffers.
With depression, they deal with it a lot different to maybe, say, women. So I think it is something that definitely needs to be, you know, worked on more, and there needs to be more awareness, and we are still trying to do that, and I think we will be doing that for a while. But I think mental health as a whole needs to be just at the front line more than ever now. Okay, I think one of the other questions I had was leaning more towards social media, because nowadays social media is everywhere. You've got Snapchat, you've got Instagram, you've got TikTok, you've got, I don't even know, Twitch, some sort of streaming thing. You've got like all these different things.
Yeah, so many different platforms.
And all of these platforms do little bit like different things, and it's like, okay, and you know, everyone's on it, and you know, there's so many people that access things through social media. But I guess there's positive things with social media, there's negative things. What would you say social media brings to your role, and how would you say that it impacts the way that you do things?
We don't have as a business, the business I work for. So Samworth Brothers has its own social media, but it's very strongly regulated, and it's only certain people can post on it. I mean, it's mainly used for job advertisements and things like that. As
promotion.
A business, Walker & Son, we don't have a social media presence at all. We don't have it. So I think kind of from a business point of view, in terms of what we do, it probably doesn't have that much of an effect on it.
Yeah.
I think it's probably more a personal thing from colleagues and the whole social media
thing from
a personal effect. You know, if somebody's fell out with somebody at work, then that can be passed through social
media and all that kind of thing for everybody to see.
And then that can have an effect on people. I mean, it's very, very controlled in terms of a business.
Yeah, of course. It's very like, there's things that you're allowed to say and things that you aren't allowed to say and whatnot. And there's a lot of just policies and all those things as well from a business perspective.
Yeah.
But I guess you've mentioned, like, in the workplace, colleagues, whatnot. I can just imagine, you know, all these little things. It's almost like, okay, Jenny's not done this and this today. Or maybe let's say that there's a group chat of, you know, colleagues and whatnot. And then there's people that are being left out, people that are being talking about. Yeah. And I'm sure that does happen.
In a lot of different environments. Kind of initially, you know, I've not witnessed that really in terms of from where I work, but that's I'm sure that kind of thing.
I suppose it's like the digitalisation of office politics.
Yeah.
It's always been there, Jamila. It just used to be around what called the water cooler or
the staff room, around the photocopier, and
then I think, you know, technology creeped in and it probably a cheeky email here and there.
Yeah.
And now it's, as you said, it is out there on social media. The difference is around a water cooler or a cheeky email.
It's not
out there.
No.
The problem, I suppose, we have with social media is it's a footprint. It is a massive footprint.
Digital footprint.
It doesn't go anywhere.
No, it's always there.
You think you've deleted something, but it's definitely still there.
No, and people dig things up.
Try and take things to haunt you and whatnot.
Yeah, but it's so instantaneous as well. I've written emails before where I've actually read it back through and thought, no, I won't send that.
Yeah.
The problem with social media is you da-da-da-da-da-da, send.
That's it. Even
if you delete it, it's been seen with people with eyes and their own phones, and they will share it. All of a sudden, you know, this thing about something becoming viral or, you know, salacious gossip, it's a feeder. It's a dopamine feeder. People love it.
It used to be, you know, it was
probably confined to the tabloids and it was more famous people.
Now anyone can be part of salacious gossip. Broader sense of social media.
Yeah, broader sense.
It's really, I mean, I never had social media when I was younger and at school. And now, with my daughter's 12, and, you know, there's social media, and there's always stuff on Snapchat. And I'm like, oh, my God, I'm so glad I didn't have that when I was... I think it's so much pressure for
you. Life is curated to look amazing.
And it's not always.
It's all about, social media is very much, this is my best, this is what I want you to see.
Yeah. Exactly, yeah.
And, again, going back to, like, what was it that I was thinking about? You know, with the younger generations now, a lot of people are on social media, and unfortunately, it can be a very... scary place, in the sense that I remember this was like maybe when I was in year 8 or so, everyone had their social medias, but what they would do is, unfortunately I found this very dumb, I never did anything like this, thank God, but they'd literally have their name on their bio, they'd have their age, they'd have the school that they went to, and it was there for everyone to see. And I was just thinking, wow, you've just given an open book for any predators.
Yeah.
Anyone out there can see that.
Tell people when you're away from your home or you're out in a vulnerable position.
And unfortunately, there's a lot of bullying that goes on.
Yeah,
How many times have you seen
in the news cases of, unfortunately, young people committing suicide because they've been bullied through social media.
It is absolutely terrible. And
it is. It's really sad.
You know, I mean, I've had experiences as well when I was younger, and there's just so much things that go into it, and cyberbullying, and again, social media, like, there's literally everything and anything, and unfortunately, it's not very censored at all. You've got certain social medias that are literally displaying adult content that should not be on there.
Absolutely.
And then you've got children that are seeing that, and those applications are not doing anything about it, and it's like, okay, I don't want my child being in any of these things, but unfortunately children would still find ways to access it. Which is just, it's just so much
difficult. So unfortunately that's the very downside of social
media, it really is. And I don't know necessarily, when you look at pros and cons of something, when the cons are that detrimental, will they ever outweigh the pros? Because there are lots of things, good things that have come out of technology. But I personally, having brought up two boys now who are both adults, the way I always saw it when I was bringing up my boys, if I could get them to 18 and they've not, you know, killed themselves, someone else, you know, because they're just so haphazard. They've not committed a crime.
I've done a good job.
The problem is, with social media coming along, there's so many more harms than the stranger in the street or looking both ways for cars. And although, you know, not sticking a fork in a plug socket type safety that you did, that Tracy and I would have had as children. Is that actually, as a parent, understanding what is harmful as well. What is termed as harmful
what
to your child.
I think, especially with, like, parents as well, I think they're at a bit of, like, a limbo situation, because they don't want to invade in their child's privacy, but they also want to make sure that they protect their child. So it can become very, like, conflicting and very contradicting, and it is something that you have to try and do, this balancing act. You know, as you mentioned, as long as they've not kind of, like, committed any sort of crimes or suspiciously handled a salmon. Have you heard of that one?
No.
In the UK, if you suspiciously handle a salmon, then you will be charged with some sort of a
offence.
Okay. Or
that's something that's likely to end up on TikTok. I'm not gonna lie. And this is the thing I used to say. You know, when I went on a night out with my friends, you would perhaps take a few pictures before you went out on a disposable camera, and then you'd go out and enjoy your night.
And you would be out on a night out to dance and have a laugh
and not worry about those things. What I feel now is people are so concerned, number one, of documenting their whole life.
Not, if it's not on a video or on a picture.
If something happens that's just a silly mistake, it could actually pretty much ruin your life and follow you around. And we worry less about those things. When, you know, and that will affect someone's mental health. You can be cancelled on absolutely nothing now. And so are people now very Orwellian style? They're worried about expressing themselves. They're worried about saying anything.
They're worried about wearing
something. Because they're going to get cancelled, or they're going to get the sack, or, you know. And I think that can really affect your mental health if you can't express who you are and what you think, because you are so worried about... You know, it's almost like being on the Truman Show. I think that's why they wrote that film, was that your life could be in a fishbowl. Everybody's got a stake in your life except you, apparently. And the level of pressure that is putting on our young people is
obscene.
Oh,
my God. It's just, oh, there's so much to get into, and we probably will cover another episode on social media. But it's just one of those things where it's like, even in the past, you know, I might have done something, or something was out there, and then I was like, right, I wasn't even in the right headspace back then. They were like, why did I do that? Why did I say that? And things like that. And again, people can't even voice their opinions nowadays, because everyone's so, I mean, I feel like as time has gone on, people have become so much more sensitive and so much more like, they're not able to even say what they want to say because of all this backlash and everything like that. All right, so, honestly, like, mental health, there's so much to it, so many layers, so many aspects, so many perspectives, so many different mental health issues and diagnoses and everything. But I think we've managed to cover quite a bit. Workplace, dealing with, you know, individuals and how it would go about and things like that. But it's been absolutely lovely having you both today.
Yeah, been a pleasure.
And I think we've definitely covered some good stuff. Definitely gotten in there and really just, you know, brought things home. So, yeah.
Well, thanks for having us,
thanks,
Jamila.
Thank you. Absolutely fine. My pleasure.